This is Publishing Talks. It's a podcast about the publishing industry in lots of different perspectives or from lots of different perspectives. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today I'm talking to Kieran Smith. He is the founder of The Best Little Bookshop, which is bestlittlebookshop.com, based in England. How are you, Kieran?
Very well, thank you.
So you've been in the book business for quite a while, and maybe you could, before we talk about Best Little Bookshop and why it exists and what you're trying to do with it, you could give a little background that tells us, somewhat generally, if not precisely, how you got here.
Be a pleasure. Although it's an ever-increasing number of years, which is always quite scary when you look back. But it's nearly 20 years, actually, in the book trade now, all in the UK, and for a mixture of size businesses. I sort of started out with a general W.H. Smith retail. And in those days, we were using microfiche and very much pre-internet in the sort of early 90s. Moved on to specialist bookselling with companies which may not meet a lot at the other side of the Atlantic, but Ottokers, which was then purchased by Waterstones, and had the opportunity sort of during the dot-com boom, I suppose, to get into online bookselling for the first time in 2000. And I think at that stage, I very much saw it as an opportunity to take a slightly different career path, because otherwise it would have been the area manager stuff and the very much the traditional hands-on retail side, and try and work out how on earth this new medium was going to work for us.
And that was the Book Depository.
Well, that at the time, that was setting up the website for Ottokers. And then I went on to work for Bertelsmann to do book club websites and a small chain as well and all sorts. And I actually spent a couple of years outside the industry working in video games, because at that point, actually, pretty much everyone closed down their web operations and let Amazon run them. And then I came back because I got fed up with the video games crew always talking about a huge number of products they had, which was about 1,500, I think, at that point. And having been used to multi-millions and always being able to find a book for someone, it was an attraction to come back and to do that again. And that was really back into the Book Depository primarily, which is sort of my last position before this one, where I spent about 5.5 years.
Yeah, maybe could you talk a little bit about the Book Depository? Because I am familiar with it, and because I try to follow everything I can, but I think there are a lot of people in the U.S. and perhaps elsewhere who are not as familiar with what the Book Depository has been.
Yeah, I mean, the Book Depository taught me one very important lesson. The planet's a very big place, and there's a lot of different book markets out there. It's very much focused on a huge number of countries. Certainly when I was there up to the end, and I imagine now still is serving sort of 120 to 130 countries, many of which are not countries with an incumbent, a large incumbent online retailer. And those markets are quite big. You know, I think it's sometimes not realized when you're in a country that has a large player that there are plenty of countries that don't have this sort of setup and position. And that's certainly something that I'm carrying forward to my new operation as well.
So if you could say, you worked at Book Depository for 5 years.
Yeah.
And you were essentially running it at that time, yes?
Yes, I was the managing director. And I stayed for a while. It was acquired by Amazon in 2011. So I stayed for a while after the acquisition and then moved on.
But it's run still as a separate operation today. In other words, when Amazon bought it, they kept it for as a self-operating subsidiary?
Yes, absolutely.
And what can you say? You may be under, I don't know whether you have a non-compete or anything like that, or confidentiality, but roughly how big was Book Depository as a retail bookseller?
Sure. I mean, I can say up to the point prior to its acquisition, because obviously post that it became part of Amazon's listed position.
Right.
And certainly our last you know, prior to the acquisition, so, you know, probably about 3 years ago now, we were doing in excess of 100 million sterling. So I suppose that's...
close to $200 million.
Yeah, or close, depending on how much things are affecting the exchange rate.
Right. But that's still, that's a very large, not by comparison to Amazon, obviously, but for as a book-selling operation, that's still...
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah, purely books, of course. You know, it's for a lot of the other operations, a lot of the other online booksellers out there, they're selling a lot of other stuff as well.
Right. And Book Depository did not sell... Or did maybe did I actually don't remember? Did it venture into kind of affiliated products like CDs and DVDs, or did it just stick?
No, I mean it was paper product. So obviously there'd be some overlap with stationery and that sort of thing, but primarily books.
So we'll skip ahead because I think that shows your experience with online retailing pretty serious and you know, you were at a scale where you could say you were a major player and you learned quite a few things, I assume. But having left the Book Depository, and I take it you took a little time off.
I had my first Christmas off in retail in many, many years.
Yeah. And but you still see yourself as a retailer. I mean, it feels like that's what you identify.
Yeah, actually, well, more specific than that, I see myself as a bookseller. Because it may be a moot point, but I think it's a slightly different thing. And it's hard to define, but I do think it's a skill about matching titles to people's interests. So, you know, were I to meet you at a party, I'd be very excited to sort of talk about the things that you're interested in. And I can't help myself but to recommend books.
Right.
And I find it's fascinating to then get that feedback afterwards as well to say, you know, occasionally people hate stuff, but often, you know, if I've done my job correctly, they're quite delighted with the things that have been recommended.
Right. Well, and it feels like, and I've always thought that there's a kind of continuum in the publishing industry that has something to do with gratification. I think that everyone in the book industry, from writers all the way through to retail book selling, have the same motive or motivation on some level, mm-hmm. and that has to do with the communicative act. But the writer's gratification is very much a long-term proposition. From conception to finished book, and even being able to communicate with readers, it's a much more diffused and difficult to define meeting point. Whereas retailer is complete. That is the other end of the spectrum, where gratification for having made a successful connection is immediate.
Yes, absolutely, and you're doing to get people to part with hard cash for something that's fairly, you know, unless they come looking for a specific title, which is more and more what I felt that online was doing actually, but to be able to persuade somebody to buy something that you're convincing them that they'll enjoy that they may never have heard of before is quite a challenge.
Right. And and of course you feel really, I mean, as you just, you know, you kind of alluded to with the party image, you know, if you meet someone at a party, what you will find interesting is to learn about them. You're customer centric in a really almost automatic way.
Yes, and I think you're right. I think it's about that sort of personal interest, and I suppose it's an excuse, isn't it? It's an excuse to get to know someone better.
Right, but
and then you test your analysis.
Yeah, no, and maybe so. In a certain sense, that is at the core. That is the belief system that underlies what you are doing with Best Little Bookshop.
Yeah, and I think it's very difficult to do it online, you know. And the online bookselling model hasn't changed that much since I first started out in 2000. And, you know, you take a catalog, you put it up, and actually, not much is done to it after that. Often, it's how do you actually engage people more actively, and how do you do this in a convincing manner. I think that's quite tough. And I don't think anyone's answered that yet. And that's something that I'm starting out on a journey to do.
Well, so maybe it would be good to talk about then the ways that you, I mean, you know, and there may be some things you don't want to give away because they're plans that you have and you're in a highly competitive market. So clearly there may be some limits to what you can say, you know, on a practical level about what your plans are for Best Sure. Little Bookshop. But in as much as you're able to talk about it, and it might be just the philosophical underpinnings.
Yeah.
How do you feel that either you or in general, anyone attempting to be an online retailer, whether it's a bookseller or anybody else, can be most successful? And again, definition of success could be, as you described it, that the pleasure, I mean, obviously you have to make money, but there's the pleasure of making the connection. You know, what do you think, how do you translate that into action?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think there's sort of, I suppose, three areas to it. One is still about this international position. So I think that's just on the foundations there. We've changed it as a society, and I think, you know, there's so many diasporas out there, and everyone's international now. Globalization has become a thing that we don't really mention anymore, but it's there, and I think that has to be borne in mind with any new online or any current online offering. And that's interesting because it also opens up different areas of the book market as well, because what people are reading in Singapore and really getting excited about there actually may be of interest to people in Canada or maybe of interest to people in Saudi Arabia. So there's some interesting ways in which people start to discover parts of the book catalog because it's so vast now. You know, everyone talks about sort of crisis within publishing, but we're publishing so many things, it's very hard for readers to get to the right things and discover new stuff. Now, on top of that international base, there's a challenge for people still to be involved. And I think we've almost gone too far down the algorithmic route of saying, well, okay, if you like this, you'll like this because of a correlation between purchases. And actually, it doesn't tend to surprise people. And what people enjoyed about going into a physical bookshop is the fact that you could just walk around and actually you'd spot things that you didn't know existed. And that's a challenge. And I think one way you can do that is by physically choosing the right books to put in front of people. And that takes experience and is hard to do. And how do you scale that up? Because actually, much as I might think of myself as a relatively professional, experienced bookseller, I can't really come up with a full selection of titles for an area that I don't know very well. So if you said to me, well, I'm really into, I don't know, Argentinian steam trains of the 1950s, I think I might struggle a bit to come up with, you know, I might know some publishers that could help. Now, the idea for Best Little Bookshop is to grow out, and this is the sort of little element, I suppose, is to harness the power of lots of other booksellers. Because actually, much as I don't know the answer to that, there will be a bookseller somewhere who is deeply obsessed with it as well, and publishers as well. And what we've been doing is talking to co-opting some of these specialist booksellers who will hopefully come on board and you know, have been very open to the idea of selling their books through the platform as well. I mean, we will remain as a bookseller. And for some of the smaller publishers, some of which don't even really get to see the light of day, who produce some wonderful stuff, to get them on board as well.
Would you include in the, I mean, because what you're talking about is essentially almost crowdsourcing the curation.
Yes, I think, yeah, that's a summary that works.
And so if you did so to extend that thinking, because I've thought about this before, I'm sure others have had similar conceptual understandings. You know, it seems that if you can't use, if you don't want to use algorithms because they're not personal, then the logical thing is to use people. Yep. And, you know, I've thought, well, there are thousands of unemployed former booksellers out there, and maybe they don't have a store, today, but they still have the burning interest that they always did, that drew them into the business as it did for you.
Yeah.
So would you, let's say I was a former bookstore owner and I've maintained my interest, but I don't have a physical storefront. Are you saying that I could contact you and say, I'd like to be a bookseller on your site?
You could, but I mean, at the moment we're really focusing on those people who are still running those stores.
Right.
Because actually what we've seen, there was a sort of a lump, I suppose, where individual bookshops look to have their own websites, but it's very costly. It's difficult to maintain. You know, how do you drive traffic to, hundreds of different individual bookstore sites? Now, the other end of the spectrum is that some of these guys are now selling through marketplaces, but I think all that does is just commoditize and drive value out the product. And for customers, I don't think it works very well either, because one, you just go in at the point where you knew the book in the first place, and then you just see a sort of ladder of prices, and that doesn't really tell you about which one you can trust or additional services or anything else. So it's not about having a vast number of choices on particular individual titles. It's about being able to offer more and more of the entire catalogue. And that will be in different languages as well. You know, it's very hard. I don't know about in the US, but there's certain languages here that in the UK that are very hard to get hold of, that there could potentially be quite good markets for. You know, even things like Spanish and French. French is virtually impossible to buy outside of France. But actually, if you've got French booksellers on the ground willing to dispatch titles and you can browse their stock through a platform, then I think that could be quite powerful.
Right. So that gets to the practical model. So you are, we're talking about bookstores that have inventory.
Mm-hmm.
So one of your tasks will be to build an interface that works easily for them so that they can upload their inventory regularly, daily.
Absolutely. And in architecting the work that we've done so far, because it's just us selling direct currently, we've tried to factor that into everything that we've built so far.
Right. So a similar model that I'm aware of would be in America, and of course it's international also, but ABE Books.
Yes, I mean, I think you're right. It's a slightly more marketplace-y approach, I would say, as it's not built around a central catalog.
Right. No, but I think clearly a different customer-facing experience, but I just mean behind the front of the store, the issue for those are all used booksellers. They have to post their inventory in order for me to know about. I mean, I actually think they have the same problems that you were describing, that if you know what you're looking for, their site is really good. If you wanted to browse it, the tool set and model is pretty awful, actually.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that, I mean, we are in early stages of that, because I hope I have some solutions to it, but it's a complex process and yes. One that will take us a while.
Yes. No, but it seems that makes it, I think that does make it interesting. It actually goes to one of the questions I was going to ask you, although right now I think I know the answer, and that is, so I've been on your site. I figured out that, you know, I can identify myself as a USA customer. So I'm on the screen where it shows me US dollar prices. What I wondered, since the books are being shipped from England, I assume what you're going to send me is the British editions of books that are available to you. Is that correct?
That's correct. Although we've got rights restrictions in place so that you just won't see in stock. You'll see out of stock for the things where there are US editions on the most part.
Right.
So we use Onyx data to do that.
But eventually then, I guess by implication, maybe I've got this right, if you were able to get US booksellers to be part of your site, then
yes.
One of your tasks would be to reveal to me their inventory in the United States as available for them to sell me.
Absolutely, yes. And it makes sense to do that, to localize that delivery. And because also, you know, eventually it'd be great to say, you know, you may not realize the book's available for you around the corner. If you want to pop around and get it, then fine too, right. You know, great. Because that's all about building relationships. And I think, you know, the web's, it became very, you know, it's a communication medium, absolutely. And it became very data-driven and everyone started talking about mass data and all the rest of it. That's great. But actually, if we lose the relationship side of this, then we lose a lot around book selling and it loses value.
So again, as a practical thing, just about the, you know, about your store, let's say I'm a bookseller. I mean, this is the thing I think that most publishers and booksellers would be interested in. So you've provided me a platform for doing what I do best and perhaps with people I would not otherwise get to interact with if I'm a bookseller. And similarly, the other side of it is, as a reader, maybe your offer to me is that you will give me opportunities to be delighted and discover and new books and be surprised by a plethora of curators who might know me or know my interests or even suspect they know my interests. But let's say I do buy a book and I buy it from, in this, again, this is not the model you have right now, but once you have other booksellers on the site, I buy a book. Am I buying it from you, Best Little Bookshop, but it's being fulfilled by this other store around the corner?
Yes, basically, yeah. In that instance, yes. And so we would continue, we'll continue to sell as well, but if you're buying from, but you'll see that. And what we presented to the booksellers we've talked to so far is very much that you would see on that page that you're buying from, I don't know, Rachel in wherever, right. Madrid or where it right. could be, you know, and they'll have a little map, you know, which we're nodding to already on our product details pages. And what we hope is you'll have a picture of the bookseller too. So we'll have the pictures of the people who are running these stores and a bit about that bookshop. So it'll be very transparent, and then we'll take a commission for those sales.
Right. And then they'll do the shipping, you'll do the billing. Do you then share my name with that bookseller so that at some later point they might approach me? I mean, this would be a worry for you, because if you do share the name, then we can have a relationship, but conceivably you could lose the customer then to the bookseller.
Yeah, I'm not too het up about that, actually. I think if this is going to work, then it has to be cooperative in the industry. And certainly the booksellers, as I say, that we've discussed this with so far, actually, a lot of them said, well, the other way around, could they bring their list of customers through to the site? And we've talked about sort of having a little mailbox, whatever, on the site, so you could check your messages and see what information you've got from different booksellers. So it's almost a case of opting into having messages from them.
Yeah.
Obviously, we'd need to do our due diligence, and we will do in terms of protecting data and stuff. And for the customers to understand that it's a dispatch sharing of data at that point. But actually, if the site's used as a conduit that's easy and works for booksellers to be able to talk to customers and they're happy to get those messages, then, you know, I think that could work very well. I think there's precedents now out there. I mean, Etsy does very well in that sort of area. You know, I'll sometimes get messages on very strange, you know, things that people have made and all sorts, which is quite fun. But there's a level of management in there. But I think we're talking about established booksellers as well, then that helps.
No, I think that makes a very interesting conceptual framework. You know, I think about, then you sort of become part of a community and that adds some value to the whole experience as well. That,
absolutely.
You know, that you feel, I mean, I think with Etsy is a good example that although it's a marketplace of individual artisans there, it does have that feeling that you're part of a community of makers. And I think with writers, with readers, there may be, you know, there's that sense, you do feel, I mean, and I think the analogy that you raised before of the physical bookstore, there there is a something about being in the physical bookstore, sharing an experience. You don't necessarily talk to all of those other customers, but you feel like you're in a social space.
Yes, absolutely.
So that opens up all kinds of possibilities as well for different kinds of communication. Now, I keep going back to the practical. I keep thinking about all these practical issues. I don't mean to do that constantly, but so...
No, I mean, you're right. And actually, the customer side is fascinating as well. So what we have in the plan is to be able to do... I mean, a lot of this is basic functionality that exists out there, but like the wish list stuff, but where our customers put it in their own wish list is to expose that and to have a little avatar of their face and stuff. So it's opportunities to browse, I think. So if somebody's put the Quentin Blake book in their wish list, there's a good chance actually they might be interested in other things that are of interest to you as well if you're interested in the Quentin Blake. So that's a way to browse through by the publisher, to browse through by the bookseller who's listing it. You know, these things make it more interesting to hang around and have a look.
Right.
And then you discover something and want to share it and say that, you know, this is fun.
Right. So you take in some of the social that Goodreads has, for example, where I could talk about, and of course, most of the book sites do, if I'm posting a review as a reader, you know, and I do a really good review, another reader might be interested in other things that I'm interested in as well.
Yeah, we haven't tried to really push the social side, I must admit, because I've just tried to create a fun bookstore to have a browse around. And I'm aware that it could end up otherwise the other way, where you're very much about the social and not about the book selling.
Yeah.
And some sites I've seen, you know, it's quite hard to find the buy button, and we've not been shy about that. So, you know, we are about selling books at the end of the day. So that's
right. Nice. Well, and it's also true that once you introduce the social, it gets complicated too, because you have to, you almost kind of have to feature all of the elements that some very sophisticated and very large sites have. If you don't have those, then people feel like there's not enough of the social. So if you're clear, you know, I'm a bookseller, this is not Facebook, then...
Yeah, and in people's time, you know, you have to invest a huge amount to get quite a decent amount back on the social side. And you need a massive critical mass of people to do so. There's, you know, that no one likes chatting in an empty room still stands. But if we can get there gradually, and you know, maybe partnering with some of these or having integrations with some of the social sites later on might make sense. Who knows?
Well, I noticed also that you, right at the very front of the store, at the top, you know, the tabs, you have one for small press and handmade, and I thought that was interesting to me partially because that's a lot of my own background and interest, but. Because I think that in the larger scale bookselling entities, whether they're physical or online, that element, the products that were made by hand or made for specialized reading or smaller audiences are neglected, and you know, sort of because you can find almost anything online. We think, oh, well, we can find anything. But in fact, because there's so much, readers don't know where to start, and they tend to congregate in the same way that people do with websites. They go to the same ones over and over again, and they tend to be the larger ones that have the largest selections or the most content. Mm-hmm. And so the smaller, less well-known, in fact, even though they're online and available to everyone, are harder to find, and they find it more difficult to attract audiences. So you're doing this, you're putting that front and center, I think is really interesting.
Yeah, I think, I mean, hopefully over the next few months, we'll have more and more of those. And I'm certainly in discussion with some very exciting small publishers who, you know, they've got some fantastic product, and the quality that they're producing as well is amazing. So it would be great to share those. And I think customers will, once they receive them as well, it's it's a virtuous circle. You get it and you think, this is amazing. I've never seen this anywhere else. It's a great content as well, and they want to share things. So it's, customers will delight in saying, well, look what I've discovered. You know, everyone get to play a part in that discovery process then.
Right. And if I think the, you know, you mentioned Etsy before, there's an element of that that's possible for you with the handmade books and the artisanal bookmaking. And today, as we become more and more digitized and digital, there is a reaction that for a lot of people, the handmade and artisanal products become more important, and it returns value to those particular people that are making them, but also to the people that are experiencing them.
Definitely. So I don't think you have to be a Luddite to believe that either.
No, I don't think that has anything to do with Luddism. I think it's a sort of natural human response. You know, that as we become more and more alienated, we seek out more and more individualized opportunities for experiencing meaning. It's human, and it doesn't mean that you're rejecting, you know, you're not throwing away your cell phone just because you're buying a letterpress printed book.
Absolutely. So they can coexist very happily.
Right. Well, they, and literally you, because you're selling them online, I could be, you know, I am in the US, I could be thousands of miles away and find connection with a publisher or a writer in, you know, another country that is making things, who is making things that I would never otherwise experience. I mean, that is something very special about the digitization and the globalization. One can also, I mean, the Luddite impulse might be we're, by creating ease of access, we are in some way altering the experience. You know, the Luddite view would be you should have to find that person in, you know, Northumberland.
Yes.
And go visit their shop and experience how they make the books, you know, the physical making of the paper and the binding. Because all you are doing online is experiencing the commodity side. But and I don't think that impulse is completely to be dismissed, but it's too much fun to be able to reject, you know, to reject this opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
For most of us anyway. So how do you see Best Little Bookshop, let's say 5 years? You obviously have a business plan. Again, I'm not asking you to reveal anything that's proprietary, but what would make you really happy if you could achieve it 5 years from now?
I think what would make me really happy is actually sort of doing how you describe the going into the bookshop, that people coming to us will feel that they're part of a social space, that there are the booksellers there, well represented from all sorts of different countries, that does feel like you can come to it and discover new stuff. And we know we're on quite a long journey to get everything there. There's a sort of basic numbers game at the beginning that then becomes far more interesting as the traffic builds and as the booksellers take part. And, you know, it's like creating a whole little ecosystem. So certainly that would be the vision for 5 years' time.
And I think it's a good, I mean, obviously I think that's a compelling vision. Do you feel, what was I going to ask you about that? That when you've talked to booksellers, it sounded like for booksellers you've talked to have been pretty supportive. How about publishers? Does this motivate publishers to join in this experience, the bookselling experience?
Yes, I think so. And I think there's a real appetite for it out there at the moment. It was interesting. We'd been able to talk to some of the publishers early, sort of before we started work fully on it. The booksellers were slightly later, and I was actually even more nervous about them because I thought they might just say, well, look, you know, we want to do this direct ourselves. But actually, that wasn't a situation that they're in anymore for the most part. And even those who were selling direct wanted to take part. So we actually announced the project right at the beginning at the Independent Publishers Guild in the UK, and there's a sort of equivalent organisation in the US, as I understand it. And again, really enthusiastic. Every day I get emails from different publishers saying that, you know, we've got this really exciting title coming out, and they think that, I think that they see an opportunity to shout about some of the titles again that, you know, people don't really see very much. And we're not talking about the extreme small press stuff here. We're talking about mid-sized publishers. And there's some amazing things being published that you just don't really get to see showcased online very well. We've added a lot of extra images for some of these titles that you'll see around the site. And some of them are as basic as books, you know, travel guides. There's a guide to New York, which is one of the City X series, which is where they get sort of creatives to talk about the things that they really love in New York. But actually, unless you see a few pages from the inside, it's very hard to see how great a book it is.
And so that opportunity seems really well. One of the things that I guess I would ask then, again, going to the extremely practical, do you have requirements for, let's say, a publisher who does participate in terms of service standards? Do they have to ship the books to the customers within a certain amount of time? Because as you know, publishers are not always set up for fulfillment of individual orders, and their systems and warehouses are often more suited to shipping bulk orders to retailers and wholesalers.
Yeah, and I think these are two very different discussions, really. For the smaller presses, certainly, well, actually, to be honest, for the big publishers as well, fulfillment's not necessarily their number one sort of passion in life. And actually, we've tended to work with wholesalers and distributors and to make sure that those books are there and available, ready to go out the door, because we have to. Just because we're enthusiastic about books and we want to sort of emote all the exciting booksellery stuff doesn't mean that we can't be held up to the same standards as every other e-commerce player, and we need to be fast in terms of dispatch. We need to get those books into people's hands. It would be very disappointing for a customer to get enthused about a title and then have to wait sort of 3 or 4 weeks for it to arrive afterwards. That would be dreadful. So it needs to be out the door and, you know, the high sort of standards that we'd expect anyway. Right. And for a lot of the small publishers, they don't really want to do the fulfillment themselves. It's right. Something, you know, would still be off to one side.
Right. No, that makes sense. I mean, obviously we haven't talked about the ground of competition that you're up against, but, you know, the standards have been set quite high.
Yes, and certainly, I mean, in the US, they're getting shorter and shorter.
That's true.
Delivery within the same day and that sort of thing. Although, you know, if we do end up with a decent ecosystem of stores there, then there's potential for that.
Absolutely.
But if a lot of it's cross-border, then I think, you know, expectations change slightly there.
Right, and so today, and just again, if I today order from your site, I'm in the US, you're going to ship me books from the UK, because that's where you have those books. What is the delivery time from UK to US and UK to other parts around the world?
It varies significantly. For the US, it would be about a week. So not too bad. And again, this is partially why we want to show little maps and things on the product details page so people know where they're coming from, because you meant to make a slight mental adjustment.
Right.
If it's traveling sort of halfway around the world, then it will take slightly longer. And other countries, sometimes it's about their own infrastructure. So still into South America, it can take several weeks for a book to arrive, so it's not ideal. But the people on the ground, they tend to have that level of expectation anyway.
Right. No, in a lot of ways, I think it is about expectation. If you tell me the book will arrive in a week, then okay. Yep. You know, there are certain times when I'd like to be instantly gratified, as we were talking before. But if I'm ordering from, and I think you see, if you go on eBay and you buy something and it turns, you can see where the seller is shipping from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you can adjust your expectations accordingly. If I'm buying something from Hong Kong and it gets here within a week, I feel pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think that in this international world. And of course, everything is now shipped by air. There's no more sea freight. So, you know, you will benefit from that, I think. You know, there's a certain service standard level, and we in each of our countries probably have learned what to expect.
Yes, I think so.
Well, it will be very interesting, I think, to see how Best Little Bookshop does. I think, you know, the site is really well designed and it's welcoming. And I think as you grow and add booksellers, other booksellers and publishers, I think it will be really, it's going to be a really interesting place. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk to you at this early stage.
And, thank you.
And maybe, you know, we'll come back in a couple of years and
see, check in, see how we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would be fun. So just before we leave, is there any one thing, any one kind of message that you wanted to impart to the book industry? You know, just a kind of coda to what we've been talking about.
I mean, I think what distresses me most in the book industry sometimes is the feeling that everything's been done online, and that, you know, I see publishers experiment with apps and there's lots of sort of, oh, with the new technology, let's play with that. But actually the real basics of good bookselling and the sort of human interaction side, I don't think it's been fully explored online. So I think, you know, people have ideas and ways they want to try and sell books and they should try them. Because I think it's a much more interesting place out there potentially than we're seeing at the moment.
I think that's good. Well, I really wish you the best of luck. I think what you're doing is wonderful and I hope and trust that you will be successful.
I hope so. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kieran. This has been David Wilk, the host of Publishing Talks. I've been talking to Kieran Smith of the Best Little Bookshop. It's bestlittlebookshop.com. I hope you'll take a look. And thank you very much.